This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 240. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
A rotten crossover continues, Gus wraps things up, it's a bouncing baby something for Mark and Abby, and an end to the never-ending legal battle? This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, January 13th, 2013. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Animal Man number 16 by Lemire and Pugh, and Swamp Thing number 16 by Snyder and Paquette. So the Rot World crossover is about to reach its conclusion. I think the next issue is the end.
So are they going to conclude it like in each issue, or are they having a special comic to end it?
As far as I know, there's not a special. It's just going to conclude in each title.
Okay.
So the Guardians, for once, actually being thoughtful about the whole thing and doing the right thing, which the Guardians hardly ever do anymore, sent Medphil to Earth, who's a plant-based Green Lantern from another world. Figured, okay, well, he'll be part of the Green, and that will make more sense. He'll be more powerful there. They also decided to quarantine Earth, also a good idea.
Well, it is a good idea, I guess, if you assume that a plant from another world would be part of the green world of Earth.
Well, the green is the green, apparently.
Yeah, well, they did say that maybe the rot would escape off Earth, so I guess you could say that.
Right. But even he couldn't fight the rot alone, so Buddy's team breaks him out, and now they have to fight the Justice League rotted, and that'll be the big conclusion for them. While Maxine makes a really bad deal with the rot in order to save her family, but doesn't really save them, and she becomes part of the rot. And that's how this whole thing starts, apparently. Meanwhile, Alec has made it to Gotham and finds Barbara in the old Batcave, has apparently taken the Man-Bat serum in order to survive.
So that gives her a link to the Red.
Right. Arkham is being used as the last human bastion. And there's non-human rogues in there with them. They mention Mr. Freeze, and they mention Killer Croc. So basically, people who are not considered human anymore. As always, Bruce has figured out a solution. He figured this out before he got totally turned into this bat creature. He's used the biorestorative serum. He figured out most of what Alec had spent all those years figuring out. They put it into this bat tank slash robot that can basically go out there and just shoot gushers of the restorative serum everywhere.
So I thought, was that originally like a robot to spread the fear thing or the Joker venom or something?
It could be. I don't know.
I sort of got the idea that it was.
It was reusing it. And Alec is reusing the old venom suit to help him basically keep pumping more of the biorestorative in him to keep him powerful so they can fight in the final battle in Gotham. And then meanwhile, Arcane has apparently beheaded Abby. That's the last thing we see in that issue, where he basically chops off her head. So is she dead? Hard to tell.
I'm enjoying this, but it's hard to invest much in it when you know that it's probably not really happening in the continuity.
It's all a reset at the end. Yeah. None of this will have happened.
None of this will have happened.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like it. I have to say it wasn't my favorite Jeff Lemire book of the week.
Sweet Tooth, number 40 from Vertigo by Lemire. It's the final issue of Sweet Tooth. And this truly is the way to finish a story. And you can tell that Lemire had this whole thing planned out from the beginning. He's been quoted in interviews saying, well, he had a basic plot line in his head. He originally thought it was only going to be 20 or 30 issues, but he kept adding things.
Well, and he did say, though, that this was also how he pictured the final issue, even when he started.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew where it was going, and he could add things, and it wouldn't change that because he knew what was happening at the end.
And that's really rare for comics today. There's so many comics where you can tell that the writer had a deadline and said, oh, okay, well, just throw this thing in, and then I'll figure out later what I'm actually going to do with it.
Or the writer's told, you don't get to write this anymore, or we're not going to do 40 issues, we're only going to do 33.
And you need to wrap things up quickly and usually in a not a very good manner. Everything really fits together, and all the main points in the series are wrapped up well. We know that Jeppard died at the end of the last issue, leaving Gus as the only main character who's still alive. So we've now moved forward in time.
And I want to point out that this is the same thing they did in Why the Last Man.
Mm-hmm.
They moved forward in time. But that was so badly done compared to this. This is like, I read this and I thought, why couldn't they have ended Why with something like this?
So Gus has formed this new hybrid society, and basically he's telling the kids the story of what happened. I don't want to give up too many details. It's just a wonderful, satisfying conclusion to a very thoughtful storyline. Hopefully you've been reading this all along. If not, the trades are available. You can wait for the inevitable Absolute edition of this, which will come out, I'm guessing, within the next year. Lemire, of course, has now become this huge talent in the industry. I doubt he'll be able to do anything this intimate again. He's off doing stuff for DC proper.
Yeah, he will be doing Green Arrow.
Right.
I'm not sure how I feel about that. I love what he's done on Swamp Thing. So if he could do something like, on Animal Man.
Right.
So if he could do something like that with Green Arrow, that would be pretty cool.
So I'm debating whether I should add Green Arrow to the poll.
I think as of the start of the Jeff Lemire's, mm-hmm. you should.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying goodbye to two here.
And that takes us into our next title, which is Love and Capes, What to Expect, number 6 of 6 from IDW by Zoller. This is, again, final issue. So Zoller's moving on to other stories. My Little Pony, I don't really know.
He's doing a special issue of My Little Pony, apparently.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly what it is. But that does lead into a little funny conversation I had with Jamie and Teresa at the comic book store.
Yeah.
Apparently, the bronies who come in to buy that can be quite mean if it's not in stock.
Ooh. You don't want a mean brony.
No. Maybe we should start reading it. Ah! I'm not going to read My Little Pony.
No. Now, of course, this title was a lot lighter than Sweet Tooth, but as Lemire did, Zoller really wraps up all the points, but he does leave things open for more potential stories. He said he's not going to do this again for a while. I don't think he said he permanently is walking away from this.
Right, but I think that he's going to be busy with other things. He does a lot of other illustration work. At least he did. I'm pretty sure he still does, like for some Cleveland sports team or something.
Some
other things. But he certainly does leave it. Again, this was an excellent end to not only the miniseries, but the whole series. It summed things up very nicely. It pulled in people who hadn't been in for a while. It said what they were doing. I just love this so much. And this is, in fact, another really good title.
One of those gateway titles to get your significant other to read comics.
Or in, anyone else.
Right.
They have a total of 4 trades in the series. They're all available on Amazon now from your local comic book store. Pretty much any place you can buy comics. On Monday, Zoller is doing a Q&A on his blog, answering some questions about it. So I'm looking forward to that. I have noticed that he's had some distribution problems with this. Even though it's going through IDW and Diamond, we still had trouble getting a few of the issues on a timely basis, and I hope that didn't really hurt how people were reading it.
Right. There was an overall issue with IDW that was going on that involved a dock strike on the West Coast, and it held things up. But I think even over and above that, it seemed like Zoller had problems getting these out.
Yeah.
getting distributed, that is.
There was another comment I read on the internet. We watched The Big Bang Theory. And on this last episode, the girls had an argument about Thor because the comic book shop owner gave them Thor to read for some reason. Or maybe they picked it out. But somebody pointed out that it would have been an entirely different conversation had they picked up A Love and Capes. And I'm liking to imagine that conversation between the girls on The Big Bang Theory about Love and Capes.
Well, it's especially strange that they were able to pick out Thor, because if you've ever watched that show and you're a regular comic book shop visitor, you'll note that this shop is strange in that they have no Marvel titles. Because the show is made by Warner Brothers, that also owns DC, and so watch the shelves. You'll never see a Marvel title. It's DC, there's some Dark Horse, and that's about it.
Apparently all the Marvel titles are the ones facing away from the camera, because that's how they found Thor.
Right, yeah. But again, Love and Capes, great series. Absolutely check it out. Meanwhile, in the never-ending legal battle, the final chapter. So this is a court case that's been going back 70 years on who owns the Superman character. Basically, DC did a lousy job in 1938 signing Siegel and Schuster because no one expected these characters to ever have a long life.
Well, like, of course not. Why would you?
Exactly. This is just a throwaway concept. They didn't spend a lot of time worrying about the legal niceties. And so the earliest issues of Action Comics, the first two, I believe, were actually remapped from the comic strip format, because Siegel and Schuster, that's how they were pushing it, as a comic strip more than a comic book, because when they created it, comic books didn't exist. Work on these first two issues was done long before a contract was signed. And that's really the heart of the issue, is did Siegel and Schuster, obviously they created the characters, but did DC buy the rights to all of the Superman concepts when they signed them up? So Siegel and Schuster and their heirs, at this point just their heirs, have been fighting this in court pretty much since the 1940s. And Warner Brothers won a huge victory this week. The Ninth Circuit Court threw out a 2008 decision that gave the rights, at least part of them, to the Siegel family. They decided to go back to what was considered a final 2001 settlement, where Joanne Siegel had accepted this fee, this huge fee from Time Warner, in exchange that that's it, that's all the money you get. They were arguing, no, that wasn't the final thing, but the circuit court said, no, that is it. Now, the Schuster's heirs lost a case earlier this year. So the only step now for them to go through is the Supreme Court, but legal experts don't see the court accepting such a case, because obviously they have the option to say, no, that can stand. We don't need to even, it doesn't even need to come before us. So now Warner Brothers can move forward with more Superman projects, like the Man of Steel project, the movie coming out later this year. That was one of the big issues, was how much money were they going to have to give Siegel and Schuster for proceeds from the movie. Now it appears they'll have to give them zero from the movie.
You know, I'm not sure how I feel about this. If it was actually Siegel and Schuster and their heirs who were the principal beneficiaries of the lawsuit, that would be one thing.
Right.
But I think that we all know it's really Mark Toberoff who would be the principal beneficiary.
Who's their attorney. And at one point, he was trying to finagle a deal in which he would have ended up as one of the three major beneficiaries, along with Siegel and Schuster. And he had nothing to do with it, obviously.
Besides, I think, inciting the family.
Right. Yeah.
To continue with something where they'd obviously already settled a few times.
Right. Right. And at least one of them, and I don't remember which one it is, but it's not actually a direct descendant. It's like a nephew, because one of them didn't have any kids. So it's not even a direct lineage involved here. So, yes, it's important that the creators get the proceeds from their works. Obviously, the comic book industry screwed over the creators for years and years and decades. And now things have been made better, maybe not perfect, but certainly better than they used to be. That being said, I think we may have come to the conclusion of all this. Let's hope so. All right, before we get out of here, it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly. Are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm pressing the button.
TV related?
No.
Movie related?
Yes.
Is it the Golden Globe issue?
No.
Okay, I guess the Oscar nominations came out too late, so it can't really be that.
That's correct. It is not the Oscar issue.
Okay. Okay, one person on the cover?
No.
Two?
Yes.
Two people on the cover. Are they both on the same, in the same movie?
Yes.
Okay. Is that movie genre related?
I would say yes.
Okay. It's not like supernatural?
No.
Not superhero?
No.
Not, is it historical?
No.
Okay. Is it horror based?
No.
Okay. Okay. Are the two people men?
No.
Are the two people women?
No.
A man and a woman?
Yes.
Okay. And so they're the leads of this one movie?
Yes.
Okay. And is it a drama?
As opposed to a comedy, yes.
Okay. And it's fictional.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. It's not supernatural. It's not like magic.
No.
It's not superhero. It's not horror. Is it mystery?
No.
And it's not historical.
It's sort of a new genre.
A new genre.
To movies, I think. Okay. Although there have been movies in this genre for years and years and years.
Okay, so are they under 30?
Yes.
Are they under 20?
No.
Okay, in their 20s.
You only have is
it,
7 seconds.
Is it romantic left. Comedy?
No.
No, like what you said, it wasn't comedy. Is it?
All right, I'm going to give you a hint. Your genre is dystopic young adult.
Dystopic young adult. Ooh, dystopic young adult.
And it's following in the trend of the Twilight movies.
That thing about the magic users or something?
No.
Oh, you said it wasn't magic based.
That's right. So a dystopic future.
Hunger Games?
It's the second Hunger Games movie, Catching Fire.
Okay.
So you'll have to remember now because every third cover will be the Hunger Games.
That'll be my first question. Jennifer Lawrence?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's Jennifer Lawrence and it's the guy who's playing Finnick. So
the famous guy playing Finnick. So famous we don't know his actual name.
I don't really care about him. he's just there to look good.
Yeah, apparently.
So
okay, so just want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including my Star Trek DS9 blog. By the way, we've just wrapped up the Justice League animated series blog just this past week. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn. Follow us on Twitter @SFPPN or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.